Hello, my name is Bill Coghlan, and welcome to First Person Civil War Podcast, which retells the stories of the soldiers and officers on the ground, and for this episode, on the water, in the battles of the Civil War. Episode 14 is entitled Lieutenant Robert M. Franklin and the CS Bayou City at the Battle of Galveston, and relies on Franklin's speech published into a book entitled Battle of Galveston, January 1st, 1863, which was published in 1911. Robert M. Franklin was born in Georgia, but lived in Galveston, Texas, for most of his life, having arrived there when he was only 6 weeks old. His father, Benjamin Franklin, rose to prominence in the Texas Republic as a jurist. Robert M. Franklin enlisted in the 26th Texas Cavalry at the beginning of the war as a sergeant. By late 1862, the 26th Texas Cavalry was posted in Houston, and now Lieutenant Franklin served as acting assistant adjutant general to the regiment's commander, Colonel DeBray. The 26th Texas received orders on 25 December 1862 to convert two river steamers, the Bayou City and the Neptune, into cottonclads for the upcoming attack upon Galveston, Texas, which the Union Navy captured in October 1862. Lieutenant Franklin wanted to participate in the attack, and given his position as an acting adjutant, he got news of the planned attack on 25 December and requested to participate. I was thus early advised of this movement, and being tired of the inactivity of post headquarters, I obtained permission from my chief and offered my services to Major, or Captain, Smith, who put me to work in the capacity of aide, middy, rustabout, or whatever name is suited to his aggregation of volunteer sailors, artillerymen, cavalrymen, and civilians who eventually manned the boats. But whatever the rank, I was with Smith on the Bayou City during the engagement, tried to stay close to him and see what was going on. Major General John B. Magruder, commander of the Confederate Department of Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona, planned the attack on Galveston from the Confederate-held city of Houston. Through several waterways, Houston gave the Confederates the ability to attack Galveston from the north. Before beginning the attack, Major General Magruder wanted the Bayou City and Neptune outfitted for combat. Lieutenant Franklin and the other volunteers prepared the two vessels around Houston. The cottonclads, especially the Neptune, soon resembled a Mississippi River boat of the olden time, loaded up to and on the hurricane deck with cotton bales, and her armament consisted of two 24-pound brass howitzers, with field carriages in front of the cotton bales on lower decks. The Bayou City, however, presented a more formidable rakish, or ironclad appearance, in the dark at least. Her pilot house and upper cabin, or Texas, had been removed, leaving the broad floor of the hurricane deck unobstructed. And he continues, a row of cotton bales, flat side down and three bales high, was placed on the guards, on outer edge of the cabin deck, and extending aft to the wheelhouse. Inside of this, a single row of bales, flat side down, was placed so that the riflemen might kneel on the inner bales, while the outer row served as a breastwork. He continues with more description of the cotton armor. This arrangement left the bow of the boat clear, except a heavy rifle gun, about 6-inch caliber, mounted on the lower deck, and without any protection. The CS Bayou City and CS Neptune's conversion from steamer to cottonclad was out of necessity. Since the beginning of March 1862, a revolution in maritime warfare was underway. Two ironclads, the USS Monitor and the CSS Virginia, clashed at Hampton Roads, Virginia, and marked the end of the supremacy of purely wooden-hulled warships. Not only was Major General Magruder aware of the battle between these two ironclads, but he was also in command of the Department of the Peninsula, headquartered in Yorktown, Virginia, and maneuvered ground forces further down the peninsula in conjunction with the CSS Virginia's operations against the Union fleet, just one day before it fought the Monitor, as he wrote to his superiors in Richmond. I have the honor acknowledging the receipt of your telegram announcing the glorious achievement of the Confederate States war steamer Virginia, and to report that I had troops on the way to Newport News and proceeded in person to join them. And he continues, discussing more steam vessels joining the Virginia. When the Virginia is repaired, they could join her at any moment, as she would be the mistress of the roads. As the Union Navy had more ships at Galveston than he had himself, Major General Magruder decided to use what resources he had on hand, meaning cotton bales, for further protection, which he also used in the defenses around Yorktown. Lieutenant Franklin and his fellow Texans also equipped the two cottonclads to accommodate boarding parties. Two large stage planks, or gangway planks, some 4 feet wide and 25 feet long, were poised on the hurricane deck, just aft of the chimneys. And he continues, the Federal boats were protected by boarding netting, made from small rope, and about 10 feet wide, and the gangway platforms were arranged for the purpose of running alongside the enemy, cutting the guy ropes so as to drop the platforms, breaking through the netting, and thus affording ready means of boarding. Excluding the sailors who manned both vessels, Lieutenant Franklin detailed the hodgepodge of units that participated in the assault were as follows. The 1st Texas Heavy Artillery manned the howitzers on both vessels. Men from the 5th and 7th Texas Cavalry Regiments, who called themselves Horse Marines, and a company commanded by Captain James Martin, served as the boarding party on the CS Bayou City, totaling 160 to 180 men, with more men from the same Texas Cavalry Regiments, as well as Griffin's Battalion of Texas Infantry on the CS Neptune, about 200 men, which served the same purpose. The CS John F. Carr and the CS Lucy Gwynn, which were not cottonclads, would also participate in the attack. The squadron of 4 ships left Houston on 31 December 1862 and arrived in Galveston Bay at around sunset that same day. Lieutenant Franklin, aboard the CS Bayou City, received his final orders from General Magruder, himself with the land-based element of the assault, which was to begin with a signal flare. The order brought, at least to the officers, a realization of the reckless character of the adventure, and a number of them were soon gathered in the stateroom discussing the chances. Someone asked Commodore Smith, who was in command of the squadron, if he thought the cotton bales afforded any protection against shot and shell, and the bluff captain replied in substance, none whatever, not even against grape shot. Our only chance is to get alongside before they hit us. At approximately 3 a.m. on 1 January 1863, the Rangers of the Prairie, as Major General Magruder called the land force, were in position and sent a flare that signaled Lieutenant Franklin and the Rangers of the Sea to attack. At this critical moment, the Cottonclads loomed up from the west in the early dawn, puffing and snorting with high-pressure steam and quivering in every timber. In the mad dash to board the Harriet Lane, the Bayou City leading and the Neptune close behind her, when about 1 mile distant, a wreath of white smoke curled over the bow of the Lane, and a shot from her 32-pound Parrot rifle howled overhead. The Bayou City promptly returned the compliment, but the shot flew wild. Again, the vessels exchanged harmless shots, and at the third shot, the Bayou City's gunners failed to ram the shot home, and the gun exploded. The artillerymen in me must interject and explain a little more why this artillery piece exploded. The rear of the bore, or tube, of the cannon is reinforced to withstand the high pressures of the explosive train. Improper ramming can still be an issue with today's breech-loading howitzers and can affect the velocity of the round. But with cannon during the Civil War, improper ramming subjected parts of the bore to intense pressures that it was not designed to withstand and could be catastrophic, as witnessed by Lieutenant Franklin. With the Bayou City in the lead and the Neptune just behind, the two ships closed with the Harriet Lane's port bow. Lieutenant Franklin credits an ebb tide in making boarding difficult. The guy ropes of the boarding gangway next to the Lane were cut, but the slight movement of the Lane prevented the Bayou City from running alongside. The angle was so great between the vessels that the stage failed to reach the Lane, and its end, striking the water, was swept back, tearing off part of the Bayou City's wheelhouse, which had already been damaged, and sweeping under the bow of the Lane. The Bayou City was temporarily crippled, and the Neptune had to take on the Harriet Lane by herself. Lieutenant Franklin noted the heavier guns of the Lane continued to engage the Bayou City. The men on the Lane got back to their guns on the quarterdeck of the vessel, 2 9-inch Columbiads, and double-shot at them with grape. But the Neptune was at this moment running head-on into the Lane on the opposite side, and sweeping her decks with bullet and buckshot drove the men from their guns. The frail riverboat, shaken from stem to stern by the concussion, began to sink, and her captain ran her ashore. As the Neptune retreated from the fight, the Bayou City fixed its steering issues and turned about to engage the Harriet Lane yet again. The vessel was quickly turned around and headed for the Lane, striking under her port wheel guard before her men could get back to their gun. And just as she was backing to join her consorts down the bay, the arms and braces of the Lane's iron paddle wheel were driven through the bow of the deck of the Cottonclad in a gnarled and tangled mass. Where the Bayou City lodged into the Harriet Lane provided a little view of the main deck. Still, Lieutenant Franklin joined Commodore Smith and 15 to 20 Texans as they boarded the Lane. Smith jumped down on the deck, followed by these men. As he reached the deck, a seaman stepped out from the wheelhouse gangway, threw up his hands, and surrendered, stating that he was a master's mate, and that Commodore Wainwright was dead, and Lieutenant Lee was mortally wounded. This surrender was so sudden that it excited suspicion in Lieutenant Penteney, who suggested the propriety of looking after the magazine, and Penteney and the writer, meaning Lieutenant Franklin, went below, found the door to the captain's saloon over the magazine locked, looked in through the opening in the door used for passing ammunition, but saw no signs of a fuse or fire, and returned to the deck, finding the decks occupied everywhere by the Bayou City's men, and the Lane's crew below decks. Lieutenant Franklin and the Texans on the Bayou City had just successfully captured the USS Harriet Lane. But there was still confusion in the early hours of 1 January 1863. Artillery on shore and on the smaller Confederate boats continued firing at the Bayou City and the Lane. But eventually, both Confederate commands discovered that the Lane was now captured and ceased fire. Despite the heavy damage to the Neptune, and with the Bayou City still tangled with the Harriet Lane throughout a truce period, the Confederate attack was successful both on land and on the water. The official report received by the Union Department of the Gulf sums up just how successful the attack on Galveston was. Galveston was attacked by land and water on the morning of January 1st. Four rebel rams made an attack on the Harriet Lane and carried her by boarding. The report details several officers killed in the fight, and then continues. Commander Renshaw blew up the flagship Westfield to prevent her from falling into the hands of the enemy. Though not included in the report, 260 men from the 42nd Massachusetts were also captured in the city of Galveston after the fighting stopped. Though victorious, the Confederate fleet was in no capacity to harry the Union Navy for several days after the fight. A Union ship called the Cambria arrived sometime after the battle and remained in Galveston Bay for 48 hours as it was ordered to disembark a detachment of Texas Union troops. The crew of the Cambria allowed a suspicious pilot to board the ship to take her into Galveston. But this man was eventually questioned. The sailors aboard the Cambria were also excited by the movements of the people on the shore. With suspicions raised, the Cambria departed for New Orleans without incident. The city of Galveston would remain in Confederate hands for the remainder of the war. But the battle in early 1863 did not affect the overall Union blockade, as it remained in place around the Confederate coast until the end of the war. After the war, Robert M. Franklin became a judge in Galveston. In 1911, he made a speech in the city to the Camp Magruder United Confederate Veterans Post 105 on 2 April 1911. Which the Galveston News and the Library of Congress later published as a book, entitled Battle of Galveston, January 1, 1863. His tone at the beginning and throughout the speech was to correct what was already said about the battle. There has been much told and written about this affair by parties who were, for one reason or another, without accurate information on the subject, and who made no effort to sift through the facts from the mass of false rumors and yarns circulated at the time. You will, I hope, pardon a brief reference to the subordinate part which I played as one of the horse marines in this tragedy of the seas. This is in reference to a book about disasters at sea, and he continues, since the reference is necessary to show that my account is largely drawn from my own knowledge and information on the subject. Robert M. Franklin remained in Galveston until his death in 1923. Thank you for listening to the 14th episode. The link to Lieutenant Franklin's book is now available on the podcast website. FirstPersonCivilWarPodcast.com. On Facebook, Instagram, X, and LinkedIn this week, you will find pictures of Robert M. Franklin, cotton bales in the Yorktown fortifications, and a painting of the capture of the Harriet Lane. The USS Harriet Lane is in the center, moments before the CS Bayou City rammed into the port wheel guard, with the Texans on deck, poised to board. You can also spot cotton bales on the port side of the CS Bayou City. First Lieutenant William Hewitt of Company I, 12th West Virginia, provides next week's first-person account as they assault Fort Gregg at the Third Battle of Petersburg. My name is Bill Coghlan, and thank you for listening to First Person Civil War Podcast.